It's Friday, May 5th, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's Cinco de Mayo, folks. I'm going to leave out happy on this Cinco de Mayo because we got a lot of stuff to tamp down the happiness factor today. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and each week I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Nothing unites Republicans like kicking people off health care and giving the richest 1% a huge tax break. Bud Light, now the official beer of repeal. Rocky, revisioned by the, GOP as a Wall Street trust fund white guy. Echoes of Senator Amidala heard around the world. Screws tightened on freedom of assembly as crackdown on protesters deepens. Plus, will the last vestiges of the neoliberals be able to hold out against fascism in France? Pennsylvania Senator Scott Wagner assaults media activists, then bars the media at a GOP event. PA House Leader Terzai considers throwing his hat in the gubernatorial ring for what would amount to the ultimate clown party shit show in a PA GOP primary. Major endorsements for Larry Krasner in the Philly Attorney General race from Our Revolution, Move On, and other progressive organizations. And PA Republicans in the House plan on voting on an anti-sanctuary campus bill on Tuesday. Yes, that's right, this Tuesday. Remember, every Saturday at 7 p.m. on Free Speech TV, you can tune in to the Rick Smith Show. Now, normally, I'll join Rick for the Resistance Report, but Rick is down in D.C. conducting a whole bunch of interviews as part of Labor History Month, so I won't be joining him this week, but please do tune in. You can check him out at freespeech.org, 7 p.m. on Saturday, or pick him up on the Dish Network or your local satellite provider, or if you have Roku, you can kind of check him out on the Roku app. You can also check out all the archives of the show right on Rick's website. We'll have a link directly to those in the show notes. Now more than ever, we need you to help keep Pull No Punches progressive media going strong, folks. Become a member for Raging Chicken Press for as little as $2 a month. Simply go to ragingchickenpress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Click Become a Member and you'll be on your way. Hey, you know what? Not ready to become a member right away? We got you. No problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking donate. We need you, the progressive community, to help us deepen Pull No Punches, progressive media that will hold power accountable. And I think that's going to become more apparent after today's show than ever. So, Sean, I can barely get words out of my mouth today. I'm so mad.
I was going to ask you, how you doing over there? You know,
I'm not doing well. I'm telling you, the repeal bill, the ACA repeal bill, that getting passed in the House by a narrow margin yesterday. What's that?
The kegger that was thrown afterwards.
The kegger afterwards, exactly. I mean, everything about this is horrific.
That right there, them rolling in cases upon cases upon cases of beer, shitty beer at that. That should be used in every single campaign ad for House Democrats in 2018. I'm just saying.
No, I agree. Especially after, I want the freaking audio from Ryan back when he was talking about being in college, like over kegs, dreaming about getting rid of Medicaid. I want that paired in with the images of them kind of carrying in cases of Bud Light to their freaking little GOP like celebratory moment. After they pass this repeal and are going to be throwing a whole bunch of people off medical care.
We're going to kill millions of people right now, but we need a beer while doing it.
Well, and it wasn't just like, we're going to have a beer for a somber wake.
No,
right?
we're going to be pounding six packs of shitty beer for the next few hours, having a party, getting drunk off our asses. Cause we finally did this after, 8 years of, talking about repealing Obamacare.
No, that's right. I mean, and look, I think everybody, if you have not seen this already, I think everybody needs to get on your computer and search for celebration, say White House celebration For repeal. And when Donald Trump comes out, right, with all his kind of House Republicans behind him, right, the vast majority of them super rich white guys, right, sitting behind him as Trump basically says, this has brought the Republican Party together like nothing else. We have a renewed sense of who we are. This is a bonding moment. And they're the glee on the faces of these people, right, on Paul Ryan and all these other scumbags sitting behind Trump as he says this, nodding and smiling in approval of Trump saying this stuff. That image should be burned into people's brains about what that party stands for right now. Because the consequences of this repeal, right? It's not even simply just returning us to where we were before Obamacare. This is actually going backwards 10 steps from there, right? I mean, this is going to kill people. This is going to make people's lives absolutely brutal. It is going to bankrupt people. And the big, huge beneficiaries of all this are going to be the top 1% once again. As we see that one of the largest, as a professor of MIT who was on the Rachel Maddow show last night, what he said, look, I don't want to say this absolutely 100% for sure, but from looking at this bill and kind of knowing some of the past, this may very well be the single largest wealth redistribution upwards for a single bill in the history of the United States. I mean, that's how big of a freaking give back we're doing, and taking money out of the pockets of working people and giving it to the top 1%.
And it's not even the 1%. It's not even the 1%. We're talking about the 0.1, the 0.01, and the 0.001% that are going to get this money, right? You know, the 1%, yeah, they're making $250,000 a year. We're talking about the 0.1%, the 0.01%, right, and the people that are like astronomically richer as you get up, as you move that decimal point over a couple 0 points.
Nope, that's absolutely right. And what you're saying, because people are going to see a lot of information about the degree of the tax cuts and so on. Like, so for example, the last version of this bill, that's not the one that passed yesterday, but the last version of this one that was costed out by the CBA, CBO, I'm sorry, the Congressional Budget Office, basically said that was going to be a $900 billion tax cut. That was going to go mostly to the very top. Now, from all the indications are that this version of the bill that's passed will be even a deeper tax cut. So that number will be more. That will be like closing in on a $1 trillion tax cut that will be redistributed upward to the top 1% and 0.1%, is exactly as you said, right? You're also going to see some numbers is that basically, right off the bat, you're going to see $346 billion will go directly to the top 2.4% of income earners. And just exactly what Sean said, if you actually break that 2.4% down, you'll see that is even skewed to the very top. So this is kind of like
this is wealth distribution. This is socialism for the rich.
That's absolutely right. And especially when you couple that with, as part of what's going to happen here, an $800 billion cut to Medicaid, right? $800 billion. That takes us way back before Obamacare. So not only do you get rid of the money, the federal money that was going in for the expansion of Medicaid, right? Not only do you do that, right? But you roll it back even further. You roll it back even further so that people that are getting the needed medical care that they have right now is going to be gone. And people who formerly were qualified for it because they were so poor are going to be kicked off, adding to the rolls of people without health insurance. I mean, this for me is unconscionable, Sean.
And to think about this, put it this way, to make matters worse, they need the repeal of the ACA in order to do tax reform.
That's
so
right.
They're getting a $1 trillion tax cut here with the repeal of this bill, and they need that to make an even larger wealth redistribution upwards for their tax reform bill that's going to be coming down in the next on the agenda item.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a wholesale defunding of agencies that are actually serving people's needs right now. And the fact that they're able to kind of fold this enormous tax cut into this bill ahead of the tax reform thing is astounding to me. This is kind of like, you know,
this is what causes revolutions almost, like, you know what I mean? Like insane times. This is what causes revolutions.
Yeah.
This is what causes people to go on to the guillotine pretty much back and, you know, eat cake. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is what like revolutions start out of, because of this type of gross negligence, gross incompetence, gross wealth redistribution to the bourgeois class.
Exactly. You know, and I was saying to some people yesterday, I was saying, like, not only do you see that kind of stuff, but the part that's missing here, right? And this is where this stuff gets really, really dangerous, right? We've seen a decimation of our progressive, right, left political organizations, right? You talk about organized labor as at like a historic lows right now, right? After they've been just freaking, the private sector has been absolutely devastated when it comes to organized labor, and now with all these kind of right to work laws that are pulled up, you see a further decimation of the public sector unions, right? So that's one component. You see that the Democratic Party has basically kind of walked away from the working class, right, in favor of the kind of professionals and the elite and things like this. And we've seen the kind of what that got us in 2016, right, that they're supposedly their nominee that couldn't lose to anybody, Hillary Clinton, lost dramatically to Donald Trump. And that party does not have its shit together, right? Yes, there's lots of people that are beginning to organize now, but we are so far behind the curve, it's unbelievable.
And you know what this is? This right here, it goes back to that press conference I was at a few weeks ago, about a month ago, a month and a half ago, where Steve Essick from the Morning Call, you know, basically put Frank Dermody and other Pennsylvania Democratic leaders, like, just, he dressed them down by just asking, isn't this what you deserve for 7 years of doing absolutely nothing when it comes to messaging? This is the vote you deserve. And he's not talking about Dermody to them. He's talking about the party as a whole.
Yep.
This is what the party deserved, because they did nothing when it came to pushing back against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act over the past 7 years. And this is what they got.
No, that's absolutely right. And like, and as usual, however, right, that's what the party deserved. But we are going to be the ones who are going to be directly impacted by it, by their freaking incompetence, by their lack of commitment to organizing. And I'll tell you right now, where I put my hope right now is, number one, thank God for Planned Parenthood. I'll tell you right now, not just in terms of the medical services that Planned Parenthood provides to women, like, every single day to needy communities, but
They provide services to people? I thought they were just an abortion mill.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Freaking Eichelberger. I'm serious. That's got to be a curse word, though. Eichelberger. You know, it's like that. Because, like, because he doesn't even freaking know what they do. But not only the fact that are they delivering services, but, like, Planned Parenthood, right, has been organizing and investing in organizing now for years, right? And you know, it's not that it shouldn't be a mystery to people, because the person at the helm of Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards, right? She's a longtime organizer, right? And she's, I mean, you know, if you want to point to kind of my top, like, three heroes right now, she's one of them. I'll tell you, if not the top one, precisely because she's recognized, I don't want to just say just her, the organization as a whole, with her at the helm, has also recognized the importance of investing in organizing, has invested in kind of getting people out. And that's precisely because Planned Parenthood has been under attack directly for so long. And again, you know, it wasn't the Democratic Party that was able to mobilize all that stuff, although there's some great Democrats that got behind it. But it's been Planned Parenthood at the front, right? I mean, we got to get behind them and other organizations who have been on the ground. And then the rest of us who have been organizing nonstop since the election of Donald Trump, got to get up to speed real, real quickly, right? And are going to have to kind of figure out, how do we get past the freaking, you know, all the kind of sniping, right, about what this group doesn't do it well enough, or this march wasn't kind of inclusive enough, or whatever that might be. How do we get to the point where we start asking the question of how do we take back power? Because if we don't have organizations, if we don't have a way of channeling the rage that has been building up and then is kind of going to, I would say, bubble over in the very near future, right? When you don't have organized political opposition, what do you have? You have violence, right? And that's what I start worrying about what happens when the rocks start going through people's windows, who voted for this ACA stuff, when somebody finds out that their healthcare has been pulled and now they're not going to be able to get the drugs that they need to survive. What's going to happen? And what about their family members who are left there to having to bury their loved ones, right? Because of this freaking, like, give back to the rich, right? What's their response going to be? And I worry about that, Sean. And I think, you know, I worry about this as the future that, of that, that we're handing over to my kids, like eventually, and the next generation. And I worry about, you know, kind of where we're going to go. But I think that's a potential way that we're heading, and it's not good.
No, it's not.
You know, I was thinking, you brought this up today too, as well. You're saying, or yesterday actually, when we were talking about this, when, you know, not only do you have that going on, but we see the kind of screws tightening when it comes to
protesting and
prosecution
dissent.
Or protesting. Yeah, exactly. So walk us through that a little bit.
So, there's actually two stories that happened within the past week that really caught my attention. One story got a lot of play. That was the lady who laughed in Jeff Sessions' face during his confirmation hearing. She was prosecuted for disorderly conduct, not just for laughing in his face, but for continuing her shouting and her protesting as she was being escorted out of the room, as she was being arrested and walked out of the room. It just shows you that is that disorderly conduct in nature? Maybe, possibly, but you're gonna go after a protester for laughing in someone's face who, you know, is by all consideration a bigot. Jefferson Sessions over here. You know, you're gonna tell me like that right there warrants jail time for laughing in someone's face and shouting down a public official during a hearing?
Well,
and
then, you know, Sean, because if it was my own secret organization, we would have done more than simply just arrest this woman.
Well, there were two Klansmen. I mean protesters wearing hoods there sitting next to her. I don't know if that was what you were getting at, but the other thing, which I actually know a couple people who were arrested in this mass arrest, was what happened J20 down in Washington, D.C. on the day of the inauguration. Mm-hmm. This week, prosecutors slapped on another felony charges, additional felony charges way after the fact, just to get these 200 protesters that were penned up for the destruction of some windows. Let's just say windows. They don't have feelings. They don't have a conscience. You know, they're not living, breathing animals or organisms or whatever. They're now facing years in prison if they get prosecuted on these charges. And the prosecutors are pushing these charges forward just to scare them into plea agreements so they don't have to muck up the judicial system down in DC.
Right.
Which is just ridiculous. I know a couple people who were arrested in that. Someone who ran, a son of a former U.S. Senate candidate here in Pennsylvania, Chuck Pinaccio, his son was arrested in 18. He happened to be in the wrong place the wrong time. I have a friend here out in Harrisburg who I met with doing some early organizing stuff. She was arrested down there, wrong place, wrong time. And I think both of them have agreed that they're going to take their courts, I hope they do, but they're going to see this through and use this through the jury.
Yeah, well, I think they're gonna absolutely have to, and you know, we're at the point where you got to even look at what, and this is again when you see when our basic institutions begin to break down, with the approval of Neil Gorsuch at the top of this, you got to be skeptical about how much justice is going to be had, and is this going to be an opportunity for the Supreme Court, because I imagine if they push this legally, this is going to go right up to the top. It'll make its way through. And then is this going to be an opportunity for the Supreme Court to actually rule against the freedom of assembly? That's my fear.
And that might be one of the most horrendous decisions the Supreme Court might render. And
exactly. You know,
10 years ago or whatever, when Keith Olbermann was still on MSNBC, he was talking about Citizens United and how Citizens United was going to be one of the worst decisions in the court's history, worse than Dred Scott. We're seeing how that's playing out right now with millionaires and billionaires controlling our politics anywhere from the federal level down to the state and local levels now.
Right.
We're watching the billionaire and millionaire class take over our political systems. This might be something to keep an eye out for, because I don't see how if they're convicted, you don't appeal this.
No,
I mean,
right.
What's scary is we're this might lead to where we this might lead to somewhere really bad when it comes to freedom to assemble, because you know who's to say the people laughing in Eichelberger's face,
that's right.
Who's to say the people laughing in Eichelberger's face don't get arrested in Pennsylvania? Or who's to say, you know, when activists come out to committee hearings and shout down their legislators for pushing these horrendous draconian bills, who's to say they don't get arrested and they don't get prosecuted because someone like Scott Wagner or someone like Eichelberger does not like what they're seeing?
No, absolutely right. Hearing. Absolutely. And, you know, look, well, you know, we've talked about this on the show. I've been reading, you know, I read Jane Mayer's book, Dark Money. I read this other book called Invisible Hands, Ian Millhiser's book, Injustices. You know, I've been reading around the kind of looking at the trajectory of this kind of rightward shift and following, you know, how this happened. Right. You know, to figure out how, you know, how you fight back. And one of the things that you see as one of these patterns that all these folks talk about the legal strategy on the right, right? Especially when it comes out of the Federal Society, some other right legal organizations. And they basically, they prep cases that they want to see go through the courts toward the Supreme Court. They don't just kind of look for one case, right? But they try to send multiple cases forward to find out which one is going to bite. And we're seeing this happening right now. Now, again, this was something that if you read about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is when she was actually working on kind of reproductive rights and things like this back before she became a Supreme Court justice. This is kind of one of the ways that she thought about approaching this too as well. You want a series of stackable bills to move things forward. But the right has been doing this kind of process on steroids. And if you look at this you know, about the two cases that we just talked about, the J20 protesters, we talk about the woman being prosecuted for laughing at Jeff Sessions, which, you know, frankly, people who don't laugh at Jeff Sessions, those are the people I worry about, but that's a whole other story. Stack that up next to what we're going to see coming down the pike here. Last week in North Carolina, right, they just passed the bill that is basically would kind of free the a driver from any kind of liability if they run into a protester with their car. Right. So you have basically, freeing up of people saying like, you know, look, if the road's being blocked and you need to get somewhere and you try to get through and you keep on going and one of these protesters gets their leg stuck underneath your car, you know, hey, you're off scot-free. Right. So that bill just passed the House by a 67-48 margin in North Carolina last week. Right. And there's a package of bills in North Carolina and also some other states here. What they're calling these bills, right? And this should freaking send shudders down your spine, right? They're calling them economic terrorism bills, right? Economic terrorism bills. Basically, if you are protesting and you are deploying civil disobedience, you are interfering with quote unquote commerce, right? You can be labeled an economic terrorist, right? And prosecuted under that clause. Right, that goes to a whole new level of proto-fascism, but they are making their way through. So yes, this stuff will be challenged. We'll see how far they get through actually the state legislatures, but they will be challenged in the courts, and then all of these things are going to be heading toward a Supreme Court that is now dominated by far right justices. This is not bode well.
And there's also talk about Anthony Kennedy stepping down soon. You know, like yeah, exactly. Those rumors are going through. So you are going to replace someone who might have been on your side in some issues with another Antonin Scalia for the next 40 years.
Right, exactly. We're talking, and you know, the fact that, you know, people are now talking about Kennedy as a moderating force on the Supreme Court. I mean, that alone. But, you know, again, this goes back to a version of what you said earlier. I mean, you know, look, elections have consequences. Right. This is not games. Right. This is real life. Right. So as much as we want to have, you know, discussions about what, you know, who's ideologically correct and all this other kinds of stuff, we should be kind of like looking at our current scenario, our current situation through absolutely wide open eyes, no rose colored glasses, and as sober as possible before we have to go drink later on because we can't take it anymore. But as sober as possible, basically just to sit there and kind of say, we cannot allow this to move forward. We cannot allow this stuff to continue. We have to stop playing games. It's time to grow up. It's time to organize, and it's time to kind of organize for power, not just some sort of kind of like abstract correctness. And that means paying attention to things like the Supreme Court. That means paying attention to state legislation that's making its way, like, you know, through state legislators and kind of through court cases around the country. That means pushing back as hard as possible against this this ACA repeal by showing up at your legislators' offices and things like this. And, you know, again, this goes, all kudos go out to those folks, the Tuesday with Toomey folks. I know you were out there again with them on Tuesday. Tuesday with Toomey. And now, from what I understand, there's going to be Fitzpatrick Fridays, Fridays with Fitzpatrick out in Bucks County.
There's Monday with Meehan.
And these things are springing up. And again, it just kind of underscores the need for us to be there. And, you know, for us, a Raging Chicken is like, I think that all the more reason that we need to be sit there, and we need to be covering this stuff too as well, so that our stories actually make it through, that there's a place where the stories of people that are engaged in resistance can be told in through our narrative, not mediated through this kind of corporate media who's more interested in kind of like following the clown show than it is actually kind of dealing with the potential really devastating consequences of this administration. You know, all that stuff kind of moving forward. So,
and one of the things I like to say, you know, what's been really nice is, you know, going out to these events for years now, you know, for years going into Philadelphia for protest, or going to every single Tuesday, most of the Tuesday with Toomey rallies and demonstrations, or going to the Capitol and going to see things, you know, It's now to the point where we have people approaching us and asking us how we're doing, and, you know, thanking us for the stories we're putting out there, and, you know, becoming more recognizable and building our base that way, you know, And building our resistance by just personal interactions with, you know, with people who read our stuff, you know, with our members.
No, that's absolutely right. So, I think, you know, being there is half the battle. You know, I think, you know, this is something that, you know, Rick Smith said to me years ago when I kind of, I'd known Rick probably for about a year or so at this point. And with some, you know, Rick was always there. You know, anytime there was a major protest in the Capitol, when we were out there as ABSCUF members, right, from our faculty union, joining with students to push back against Corbett's budget cuts to higher education, Rick was there. When the NAACP were showing up for a rally at the state Capitol to protest the cuts for public schools in Philadelphia, Rick was there. And, you know, one of the things that Rick said is, I was, you know, he's handing out flyers to people on a street corner about a show and talking about a show, and, you know, I said, hey, give me some, I'll distribute for him too as well. I'll run up and down the stairs. And, you know, we got talking about how hard this work is, in many ways thankless, in many ways you know, you're always, you know, especially someone like Rick who does this kind of full time, you're always basically having to kind of beg people to see that it's important to invest in these institutions. But, you know, one of the things that Rick said, he said, you know, he's like, you stay in the room long enough, eventually someone's going to notice, right? And it was kind of a version of, you know, what Milton Friedman, and I hate to draw from the kind of right-wing economic theory, but one of the things that Milton Friedman always said is that, you know, in states of crisis, the solutions are determined by the ideas that are lying around. Right. And that was, you know, part of the right strategy is you develop, you know, you invest in your kind of right wing think tanks, in your organizations, even if they're unpopular now, you invest in them. So, and you do your research, you do your studies so that when the time crisis comes, you have your solution and you have your group that makes it sound like anything else. You know, this is Rick's version was a little bit different. So, you know, you show up and you're always there. You kind of cover what's going on in the resistance. Because eventually we're going to need it, right? And then we need the practice of it. You can't just start these things up overnight. I mean, look, Raging Chicken, we've been going at this now almost 6 years. And we're finally at the point where we actually bring some more people on. But I really think that's you know, direction we have to go. But, you know, Sean, I want to get, you know, as a way to kind of close out this, and then I want to take a little break. We'll come back and talk about some of the, you know, freaking PA nonsense that's going on. But the, you know, this weekend is, we're going to see the, I think it's this weekend, right? I mean, this is the French elections are coming up. And you have, as it seems right now, it looks like Macron will, looks like he may pull this out, may stave off a full-fledged fascist takeover in France. But then you're looking at what that election means is basically you've got like the neoliberal centrist is basically going to be the solution to
Western democracy right now.
Exactly. I mean, have you been following much of the elections much?
I haven't been really following the election. I've been reading up on it. One of the things that like scares me, right? So back in college, I took a class on political geography, right? And one of the things we talk about is scalar, your different scalar levels, right? And mm-hmm. scales, not just like, you know, scales, how you're scaling something up, like in science, but more like your scales, like local, regional, national, international, stuff like that. And one of the things that like put in the context, you know, the paper I wrote for that class was on Occupy Wall Street, right? And how Occupy Wall Street was related to the Indigados movement in Spain, which was related to the Wisconsin movement and other populist uprisings back in 2010, 2011. You know, and, you know, I see the same thing happening here, the same trend.
Yeah.
You know, Brexit is related to Trump. You know, and the Brexit, all everything that's happening with Brexit and Theresa May, you know, Trump and Le Pen, they're all related. You know, this is the rise of a fascist oriented movement that we're seeing. You know, we're seeing decades of neoliberal policies, abandoning working class people, finally imploding on itself, right?
Yep.
And, you know, if Marcone wins, then it'll be a good thing. But, I mean, Marcone is campaigning on reforming the 30-hour work week in France, going after certain exactly. worker reforms. And, you know, he's an investment banker. He was Hollande's economic advisor. And this is the type of person that you're putting up with. You know, he's going to do more austerity-oriented politics. You know, which is what, you know, Clinton, you know, in my opinion, Clinton was also all about continuing the austerity politics of the mid 2000s up until now. And, you know, at some point, austerity is going to create an unequal balance. Either it's going to be a populist left leaning movement, or you're going to have or at least a vacuum, a space for, you know, your right-leaning fascist movements to start. And, right. you know, and this is where you see austerity happening in Britain for so many years. What did that lead to? That led to the UKIP party with pushing for Brexit and going after immigrants and scapegoating immigrants. Le Pen is running on that same platform. And it's, you know, even if Le Pen, I still have a shaky feeling Le Pen might bring this out. You know, we won't see until the election's over, because I mean, what, every pollster had Clinton at 99% at 8 o'clock on Tuesday night once the polls closed, and look what happened. You know,
no, that's right. You know, look, and you know, go ahead. Sorry.
I know. I mean, if Le Pen becomes president of France, you're going to see the whole dissolution of the European experiment, which, you know, we're just like, we're as a society, it looks like, you know, on a grand scale or level of Western society, it looks like we are just, you know, walking ourselves right off the cliff because of 30 years, 40 years, 50 years of neoliberal economic policy, you know, the latest austerity measures, and, you know, not having organizations, not having you know, organizing against, you know, these right wing movements that have been popping up.
You know, Sean, it's like, you know, I remember, you know, I know a lot of, you know, people go through this, especially you're kind of growing up, you're learning history and things like this. And, you know, at the risk of trying to make too extreme of a comparison, nonetheless, I've been thinking a lot about this lately. And I was thinking about, you know, my friends, like in high school, even for that matter, when you started learning a lot of the history of, you know, the rise of fascism in the early 20th century. And, you know, I mean, and communism and all other kind of stuff at the same time. And then you start learning about, you know, the Holocaust, you start learning about, the kind of the racist politics that were kind of going on, and, in Spain, in France, and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, always saying to ourselves, you know, how could these people just stand by? Right. I mean, how could they let this happen? If I was there, right? You know, I would have done X, Y, and Z, you know, and then as you kind of learn more and think like, you have to really ask yourself that question, what would you have done, you know, in the rise of it, not like at the last minute after you freaking Hitler's in power or shit like this. But I mean, as you see these movements growing, like all the stuff that was there, that preceded that led to that fall. And, you know, I don't think that, again, this is where, again, I don't like making these kind of extreme things, but I think we need to ask ourselves that question now, not like what would we have done back then, but here
what
we
are you
are
going to do now?
Exactly, with another historical experiment in the same dynamics, right? That doesn't mean it's going to end up in the same place it did back then, right? But the dynamics are similar, right? We have this is the greatest rate of inequality that we have seen in this country since the eve of the Great Depression, right? That was the same kind of economic context that preceded the rise of fascism in Europe, and that we got lucky here in this country that we decided not to go there. So let's remember is Henry Ford and some of the major industrialists back then, right, were sympathetic to the fascists, right? They were sympathetic to that, and they were kind of as anti-Semitic, right, as they were in Europe, right? So by historical accident and the fact that we elected FDR as opposed to some right-wing nut job, we struck a different course, right? But there is no guarantee in that. Right. And so I think we need to be re-asking ourselves that question. What do we do now in the face of these growing proto-fascist, you know, movements? Right. We see what's happening in our government and how we're staring down the gun of the massive wealth redistribution to the top 1%. What will our response be? I'm glad we're seeing it so far, that we're seeing that kind of response. But crap, man. I mean, it's just
it's going to be enough.
Exactly. And I worry about that. But so on that note, glorious, happy note of historical whatever, we're going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to come back and talk about the clown car politics right here in Pennsylvania. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. That was the day that became known as the Battle of Harlan or the Battle for Evarts. Harlan County, Kentucky was coal country. Miners worked long hours underground and faced dangerous and often deadly working conditions. If they attempted to form a union, they risked not only losing their jobs, but also getting evicted from their company housing. Despite this response, starting in the 1920s, the United Mine Workers of America began to make headway in organizing miners. In Harlan, the miners who dared organize were fired. They and their families were thrown out of their homes. The company brought in hired guns to enforce the evictions and to keep the union out of the mines. Union miners and these gun thugs met on the road outside of the town of Evarts. A gun battle broke out. Three company men and one miner were killed. The governor of Kentucky once admitted, quote, "There exists a virtual reign of terror in Harlan County, financed in general by a group of coal mine operators in collusion with certain public officials. The victims of this reign of terror are the coal miners and their families." The Harlan County Mine Wars raged on for the next decade. In all, 13 miners would give their lives trying to bring a union to the Kentucky coal fields. It was one of the bloodiest struggles of the U.S. labor movement. Bloody Harlan earned its nickname.
They say in Harlan County that Harlan is just there.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. I had a little bit of a break. Can't say that I'm calmed down, though. As we turn our lens to here in Pennsylvania, it's been quite a week for Senator Soprano out there, hasn't it been?
Senator Tony Soprano. The snowflake. The snowflake that needs a safe space.
Yeah, so yeah, if you're not making the connection yet, folks, we're talking about Senator Scott Wagner, who runs a trash business, you know, that kind of stuff. And by the way, Sean, this would make me happy, right? In the face of this kind of stuff, I just have this vision. And I told you about this the other day. I think how freaking awesome would it be if that when Scott Wagner was showing up and giving his public kind of like, you know, campaign stuff like that, if people just didn't show up as citizen media people, right? And just kind of like scatter throughout the crowd, right? And try to ask questions to him when they're taking questions, and they call him by Senator Soprano, Senator Soprano, Senator Soprano, right? I'm asking him a question. Keep on referring to him as Senator Soprano. I think that would be freaking awesome, right? And we could ask him, do you actually know Joey Two Socks? There's no socks, whatever his name is, you know, come on, Senator Soprano. I think that would be freaking awesome. And I think that's what that guy deserves.
Whose back did you have to break to get that contract, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right, Senator Soprano. You take out the trash, you know.
Dump any garbage on someone's driveway for that business there.
That's right. That's right. That's right. He had quite a week, huh?
Yeah, the snowflake. Oh man, where should we start? Insert your alt-right snowflake safe space jokes here.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it too early in the PA Gov race for this yet? Or not?
Apparently not.
So, earlier in the week, a tracker from American Bridge, a left-leaning super PAC, was recording Senator Wagner for a whole 4.5 minutes at the York County Country Club before Wagner spotted him. Now, before I go into the story, let me just say I still hold the record for getting kicked out of a Scott Wagner for governor campaign event. I still hold that record of like 3 minutes.
Okay, duly noted. Duly noted. We will make sure that your record is recorded and held.
I still hold the record for getting kicked out of a Wagner campaign event. But Senator Wagner spotted someone recording him. It took him like 4.5 minutes. I guess he didn't have his bifocals on that day or whatever. And he said he was talking about how they needed someone level-headed in office. And then once he spots the cameraman, he's like, all right, now you're going to see your senator in action here. He comes up and rips the camera out of the tracker's hands. And one of the things that happened after this story broke, I kid you not, I must have got like so many phone calls and text messages and emails from people. Not phone calls, but like I had customers ask me at work. I had like people texting me, emailing me, and getting contact with me on Facebook asking if that was me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I said, no. And I also said this, I don't care who you are, with the money I have invested inside with my camera over the past 6 months, if you reach for my camera, and I don't care who you are and you're trying to rip it out of my hands, you might get to see how that lens actually feels. You know, just saying. You might get a Canon L series lens to the face.
And I'm just saying that I can't be entirely responsible for my actions in a situation like that, is all I'm saying.
You're not going to come up to me and rip my camera out of my hands.
I'm just saying, it's a little forewarning, right? To the anybody who wants to try such a thing at a former event. And then I want to leave my camera alone.
And then you give me the money for that Canon 5D Mark III. That's $1,000.
That's right.
But so Senator Wagner does that. There's a back and forth. Now I'm just joking about the violence. Maybe. But no,
you never know what happens in a scenario like that, you know?
Yeah, you might lose a digit or two if you reach for the camera. You know, you don't put your hand inside the crocodile's mouth. No. Just doesn't work out sometimes, you know.
Doesn't go where you plan. That's all you're saying.
But so Senator Wagner
concept in your head about this is the way this is going to go down, and then it doesn't happen that way. It happens.
And then Senator Wagner's like, so Senator Wagner takes the camera out of the guy's hand. He says, "You get the tripod, I get the camera." And you see Senator Wagner like a caveman trying to figure out how like flint and steel works.
Yeah.
You know, like poof, 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 trying to figure out how you get the thing off the
tripod.
Yeah, get the camera off the tripod. And, you know, Wagner thinks that since you're on private property, that automatically thinks as trespassing. And my thing is this. I've snuck into events. It's not that hard. Really, all you need to do is put a shirt, tie, and khakis on, and you're good to go in.
A nice pink paisley tie, for example.
Yeah, a nice pink paisley tie, a nice blue outline on there. You know, put my hair over. I got my hair cut. You know, put wax it over a little bit. Kind of look as Republican as possible, mm-hmm. you know. But the thing is, what Wagner really should be, like, complaining about is the gross incompetence of his staff. And for his people for allowing someone to actually sneak in. Because really, like, all I did once I walked in, I literally put my hand over my thumb over like the press badge mm-hmm. part, like the expiration date, because it was like a year expired at that point. And I just said, you know, I'm with the local media outlet. And they're like, oh, okay. And they just let me right in. I was in there for like 2 or 3 minutes. So I didn't get spotted until the one chief of staff, who is now his campaign manager, spotted me there. Mm-hmm. So that right there is, you know, it's really not that hard to get into events. All you gotta do is just dress up, play the part, and really just like look the role. It's not that hard. Don't look out of place.
But the bigger issue here is, right, is that these guys want—
he's so private, unhinged.
They want private protections for public pronouncements, right? I mean, the thing is you're going to sit there, you can't continue to operate like you own the freaking world, like it's your own little fiefdom when you're kind of in a public role. And they try to—
well, he's used to having people blowing smoke up his ass.
They try to park themselves behind their kind of like private walls to try to keep the media out and things like this. But you know what? I mean, I think we have a reasonable expectation for access for that. So we actually know what's going on.
Yeah. And so that confrontation happens.
Well, then not only does he take the camera down, right? I mean, then the guy who's the tracker, right? If anybody knows what a tracker is, basically it's an organization who's basically follows that guy around, right, to find out what's happening at all these particular kind of events. It's pretty standard practice these days. But then the guy pulls out his cell phone, right? And then it kind of says, I want my camera back. And then Wagner comes up and basically looks like it practically hits him in the face. So like what's that? Kind of knocks the phone out of his hand or whatever.
Yeah, which is assault.
Right. Exactly. I mean, this is what, you know, this is the guy. This is your senator in action, right? This is Senator Soprano himself. Thug. Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly. He's in all his glorious thuggery. Yeah.
You know.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then, then last night, since that incident with the tracker happens, there's some sort of public dinner where media is invited with the GOP out in Western PA, and he demands the media to leave the room as he's giving his speech. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing is, how is this guy going to treat the media if he gets elected governor?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Not well.
I mean, we have our own little Donald Trump, Tony Soprano running around. I think calling him Donald Trump is not even the right thing. It's Tony Soprano. Like, he's our Tony Soprano.
That's what I'm saying. Senator Soprano. Yeah. I mean, that's why I think I think that's people should be dogging him on that. I think exactly right now. And I think it's, you know, it would even be, first of all, like you gotta have some sort of comic outlet here, and that would be a useful one, right? One that would just kind of throw him off his game, because he's got zero patience or ability to control his, like, you know, his outburst of rage, right? And that kind of stuff. But in a context, right, he's already, you know, Wagner has gone after House Leader Terzai over and over and over again, right? Keeps on saying there's a lack of leadership, they're not doing anything, blah, 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 blah. And now Terzai never looks too kindly about all that, but he's a little cautious about going after Wagner, because Wagner is, you know, he's a billionaire. He's got, you know,
he's also a little unhinged.
Well, that's what I mean. So then Terzai comes in, right? And Terzai is a nut job in his own right, right? I mean, that guy has been unbelievable. He's the guy, remember, who publicly came out and said, look, you know, get Mitt Romney elected to president, or PA elect Mitt Romney as president, done, right? Because of the voter suppression bill, right? This is a guy who's not even freaking clued in enough to know that if you're going to do underhanded, potentially illegal politics move, you don't freaking announce it at a press conference.
Or he reads, or he is thumbing through natural gas provided talking points as he's at a press conference in the Capitol.
That was one of my favorite moments of all time, I have to say. Sitting there with the freaking talking points from the gas company, kind of basically reading through them so you can see that this is not even his thing. He's actually reading the words of the gas company and his legislators, not even him. That was unreal. But so so Terzai now says that he's seriously considering whatever a serious consideration looks like in that guy's world. I have no idea, right? It has something to do with freaking like
it's a guy with like a little spinny hat on top.
It has like smurf, yeah, the spinny hat, smurfs, right? And dice or something like this. I don't know. I mean, it's some sort of freaking risk board game shit going on.
I think if Terzai gets elected, right, all baby born will come out of the womb with a bottle of vodka in their hands.
Oh my God.
I think that's gonna be one of his campaign platforms. We're gonna privatize liquor to the point where all newborn babies are coming out with a bottle of vodka in their hands.
Why is it that we limit the freedom of kids? Why is it that we have this arbitrary, the market should decide, right? Like crazy. If that kid can't get themselves off vodka when they're kind of like 3 years old, it's the old kid's damn fault. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, you could just imagine it. But Terzai, so if Terzai throws itself in, it promises to be quite a
clown car.
As I said, this is going to be like your clown car shit show right at the beginning, because it will be something else. The good part of it, though, will be this, is that we will have the unmasking of the PA Republican Party in full view of everybody, because these are two people that are incapable of actually hiding kind of what they're really after.
So if you think that's going to be a shit show, the Senate race is turning out to be a shit show as well. Do you see this? Lou Barletta, Donald, he's not officially in yet, but there's reports that Trump has asked Lou Barletta to run for U.S. Senate, and they were talking about last week. So you have Rick Saccone, the crazy religious nut job. You have
God's got a plan, Sean.
Christiana, the natural gas driller, right, running out from Western PA. And then you have Lou Barletta, the leader of the Klan. I mean, the former mayor of Hazleton, considering a run as well.
Exactly. This is the guy, by the way, right? So Barletta is one of the guys that got so far behind, like getting the immigrants, right? Potential immigrants out of Hazleton, PA, right? That so many people, and like you said, the illegals were going to come down them. They were going to deny them housing, all sorts of stuff like this, unless they could produce their papers, all this kind of shit. That even people who were there, who were, you know, perfectly legitimate legal residents, right, who were of any kind of Central American or South American Mexican descent, right, any of them, like that, they left the town. They left, and so many people left that it freaking had like almost caused like a little mini economic collapse in the town because of his policy. So this is this freaking dude, man.
And also he opened up the city to affordable housing and stuff like this, Section 8s and vouchers and stuff like that for housing, that brought a lot of these immigrants in. It caused this problem.
Exactly. Himself. Exactly. It's just nuts, man. It's nuts. So yeah, so this should be, so now we're going to have that. We're going to have a crazy Senate race. I hate to have to think this way. Right. But I think I'm going to need those moments, Sean. I'm going to need the moments of craziness, right? For a little bit of comic relief.
And my God, we'll make a seed of a nation.
Oh my God, Jesus.
We should put like sound clips together of like the following year of just like the videos that we've taken and this different sound clips, and just start off with Rick Saccone. And my God, we'll make a seed of a nation.
Exactly. No, this is one of the things actually playing on the. So if you notice that, people, longtime listeners of the podcast will notice, especially on my end, you'll see that the quality of my voice actually kind of goes up and down from week to week. I've been trying to rig up a much better system at my home, in my home little quote unquote like workspace. So I'll say studio, but it's not really studio; it's just my workspace. But I keep on running into a whole bunch of issues, and I think I've figured out how to make this out. So, because what we'd like to be able to do is actually bring in sound clips and be able to play some clips actually during the show, so we can actually record them and so we can talk about them. And that's one of the things that I want to do. I want to have a soundboard with some of this stuff. And I was like reminded of it yesterday. I don't know if you saw this. There was the press call the other day of the Trump admin. Did you see this thing? where the whole music starts playing in the background. I
went to town.
I'm serious. I had to pull over on the side of the road because I was laughing so hard. And I saw it the night before because it played on
Madhouse. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, when she says that, when that reporter, this is unbelievable, when she like loses, that reporter loses, like, I can't believe this is actually happening. I had to pull my car over because I was laughing so hard I couldn't see. And it was like, you know, that's a state what you're in. And, you know, look.
Oh, God, this is going to be a disaster.
Oh my God. And I want that actually to be like, you know, it's kind of what a little sound clips, right? When you're like, this is unbelievable.
Or no, when Mulvaney goes, this is going to be a disaster.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I mean. This is, it's just, yeah, I mean, over and over again. But anyway, so we have, look, there's a lot of promise here in PA that we're going to be able to add substantially to those sound clips in the coming months as this show gets on the road. But
Thank you for admitting you don't know what Planned Parenthood does.
Exactly.
And Tuesday, there's going to be another opportunity.
Yeah, because the sanctuary bill we got coming forward.
Yeah, you know, Pennsylvania's leading white nationalist, Daryl Metcalf, is going to be bringing up House Bill 14 for a vote, which is Jerry Knowles's sanctuary campus bill in the House. So it's the companion bill to the Senate bill that just passed. That had one Democrat who voted for it. That was Andy Dinneman.
Everybody hear that? Andy Dinneman, right?
So especially
right
down there by
Westchester. He's a former faculty member at Westchester University, right? He's one of the Democrats that was trying to push to allow for Westchester to secede from the state system of higher education so he could get out there. And now he's the sole Democrat who's got behind a anti-sanctuary campus bill. So Andy Dinneman, folks, the Bitcoin guy from down in Westchester. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I will try to remember to put the clip of his Bitcoin garbage in there too as well.
When
sanctuary campuses.
So let's sidetrack, I guess. When I introduced myself to him when I moved out here, that was like 6 or 7 months after that happened. He gave me so much shit for that. He's like, that was you? Jesus, what was that all about?
Bitcoin. Yeah. Anyway, so Dinneman voted for it.
Yeah. So this Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the G50 in the Irvis Building, Daryl Metcalf is going to be bringing up House Bill 14 for a vote, and we'll be there with the camera rolling.
Yeah, man.
Getting ready for some good action.
Well, I can't wait to hear. You know, first, I would assume that it's expected to pass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, given the fact that, I mean, everyone, and you don't know about anything about Pennsylvania politics, you can know it's like a lot of these other places that you have a, you know, House and Senate that is just kind of like over dominated by Republicans, and kind of it's gotten just more conservative as years go on. So, and this is the kind of bill that, you know, I think there's a lot of quote unquote moderate Republicans, whoever the hell they are these days. Dinneman's supposedly one of them. And here you go. I keep on calling him a Republican. I wonder why. But you've got these folks that they look at this as kind of an easy gift. They don't think that there's going to be a lot of pushback. They think it's going to make them sound like they could be anti-immigrant.
And they're going to use it for fundraising. I don't think there's any notions exactly of sending this to the governor's desk. They just want to get this out there so that they say that they voted for it. They can say it back to their constituents and using it in a fundraising letter, or use it against Democrats who voted against it.
That's right. And we should note that one of the reasons why that we see this bill moving now is because students across the Commonwealth have been organizing around sanctuary campus issues, especially in the cities. So you've got at Westchester University, at Penn, at University of Pittsburgh, and some other campuses around the state who have actually been kind of pushing for this. So this is a right-wing pushback, right, against student organizers across the state. So this is, you know, yet another example of the way that these people are just going to force their agendas. So, but we do have, okay, so now we got the craziness, but there is a glimmer of good news coming out of Philadelphia in the attorney general's race.
Yes, the district attorney's race. District attorney.
I'm sorry, district attorney.
So yeah, we've been talking about
thinking,
this.
Man.
We've been talking about this the past, you know, often on the past few weeks. Definitely keep an eye out for this race. There is a potential for Larry Krasner to win this this race. He was a civil rights attorney for the past 30 years. He is absolutely hated by the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police. And him jumping in the race has dragged the positions of everyone else. I would say he's a front runner with a couple of other people, have pushed all the front runners to the left, the far left on some issues, especially when it comes to bail reform. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the positions is if you commit a nonviolent drug offense or if you commit a nonviolent crime and you don't have the $5,000 bail, so the $500 to get yourself out of jail, you should not be sitting in jail until your trial for petty crimes, victimless crimes, and even nonviolent crimes. And that's one of the things, one of the platforms he's running on, and he's pushed a lot of the other candidates to the left in supporting that. And, you know, over the past few weeks, he's gotten some big endorsements from national outlets, from national organizations. Bernie Sanders, Our Revolution, has endorsed him.
Yep.
MoveOn.org has endorsed him. Democracy for America has endorsed him. PASNAP, the Professional Association of Staff Nurses and Allied Professionals, the strike that you covered a few weeks ago, that union is supporting him. Let's see, Food and Water Action Fund is supporting him. One of the environmental groups. I'm just going through the thing. Pennsylvania Working Families Party has supported him. So he is getting 215 People's Alliance. He is getting the endorsements of many grassroots activist organizations within the city that are local and national. And this might be the type of coalition that gets him to win. I stated when he first announced his run, I said that Larry Krasner is going to win simply because of the times we're living in. You know, if this was 4 years ago, 2013, Larry Krasner would not stand a chance with this election. Simply because of the politics involved. But with what's happened with the district attorney's office, with Seth Williams looking like he's probably going to go to jail for a while, mm-hmm. You know, the history of Seth Williams and Lynn Abraham running this office for the past 20 or 30 years, it looks like that this might be an actual, like, one of the biggest victories, biggest outcomes for progressives throughout the country, pretty much. This might be one of the biggest progressive coups of the 2017 primary elections to come out on the local levels.
Absolutely. And I think that, just, you know,
You know, if you look at what happened down in Jackson, Mississippi, Lumumba, a son of, I don't know the guy's full name, but I think his name was Lumumba. He was, let me just pull it up real quick. But Chakwe Lumumba Jr., he was a big activist, socialist-leaning activist down in Jackson, Mississippi. He won his primary to become mayor of Jackson, which means he's going to be the next mayor of Jackson. You know, we've seen different socialist candidates running throughout the country over the past few years, different really progressive candidates, and this might be one of the biggest progressive victories if Krasner wins the district attorney's race.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, it's something telling, you know, and I think that this is, this has the opportunity to really, I think, shake up Philadelphia politics too, as well. And
this goes against the ingrained party, the ward system. It goes against Bob Brady, everything that is corrupt about Philadelphia Democratic Party, you know, everything that's wrong with the Philadelphia Democratic Party, with the party structure. Yeah, this could be something that shakes things up a bit. This is a warning shot across their bow.
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, at the same time that we see that going on, and this is why I think it's very, very interesting. So you see those organizations come in. And again, this is the, you know, you look at the results, the concrete results of the Bernie Sanders campaign, that now you've got people who've got to move that forward. And yeah, there's all the sniping that takes place about like the Bernie bros and all that kind of garbage. But look, a huge cadre of people that came out of that campaign and are working at Our Revolution, and they're actually investing money and time and staff To get behind particular kinds of candidates. And this is another example of this. That's good. At the same time, we know down in Philadelphia, like Socialist Alternative has been doing phenomenal organizing on the ground there, especially around kind of Temple and the stadium building and that kind of stuff down there. You also have chapters.
The Philadelphia Socialist?
Exactly.
Did you see their fundraising campaign?
Yes, I did.
They've raised close to $20,000 over the past month.
Exactly.
Think about that. An organization that only had 100 dues-paying members before the election raised close to $20,000 for organizing their group, Philadelphia Socialists.
Yep.
You know, it isn't my opinion that it is, you know, your socialist organizations that are going to be pushing a lot of change over the next couple of years.
That's right.
I myself classify myself as a socialist, even though I'm registered as a Democrat, simply because I can vote in Democratic primary process here in Pennsylvania. But I consider myself a socialist, and I strongly believe in what the organizers there in Philadelphia are doing. I know who they are. I'm friends with them. You know, I've known them for the past 5 or 6 years. They've been doing a lot of good work, and they've been really one of the groups, like Philadelphia Socialists, Socialist Alternatives, DSA. Those three groups right there have been pretty much leading the resistance in Philadelphia over the past since the Trump election.
Well, exactly. And what they've started doing differently over the past several years, right? You know, because look, a lot of there's been socialist organizations around for, you know, longer than I have. That's for certainly.
They're doing a lot more community-based organizing,
right? They're doing a lot of on the ground nuts and bolts organizing, right? And if you look at DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, one of the things that, you know, they've seen since the Trump election, they've seen their numbers explode nationwide, and we're seeing that happen in the Philadelphia area too as well. When I was at Labor Notes a couple of weeks back, I was talking to some of the folks from Philadelphia Socialist, Philly Socialist, who were there, and one of the things that I'm really, really liking, right, which was very different from when I was in college and kind of things like that with the socialist groups back then, is that there is less of a kind of ideological dogmatism, right, on the part of a lot of these groups, right? Like, so for example, we were talking about Socialist Alternative and DSA and things like this. And when I was in college and I was younger and I was kind of involved in kind of, you know, grassroots, I was involved with a group called Solidarity, right? Democratic Socialist Organization, that a lot of the discussions among the socialist groups are like, which one had the right vision, right? That is not the case with this next generation of what we're seeing in Philadelphia and across the country, where they're actually looking at community-based organizing. They were like, you know, the one guy from Philly Socialists who was actively talking about like what a great job they were doing, Socialist Alternative was doing over with the stadium stuff, that he was telling me about what they were doing and how some folks from Socialist Alternatives were showing up. So that's a good thing. You're talking about building that kind of network of committed political activists on the ground. And this kind of this election coming up in Philadelphia has that opportunity of, I think, of bringing people under a kind of a more broad-based umbrella potentially, I don't want to get too far ahead of it, but the opportunity to really shift the way that local politics work in Philadelphia. And I think people really should be paying attention to what's going on in Philly right now. I mean, I know Philly always kind of gets short shrift when you're kind of putting it next to New York and Chicago and LA and things like this, but there's some really interesting stuff happening in the city.
There's even a DSA chapter starting up in Harrisburg, of all places.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yep, exactly.
I've met the guy a couple of times before. I haven't been able to get to a meeting yet. I'd absolutely love to get out to the meetings, get involved. But I remember one of my friends asked me to start the DSA chapter. I was like, listen, I'd love to start a DSA chapter out here, but I don't have like the time to do that. You know, it's either writing or doing the organizing. You know, but there is a DSA chapter out here that's being formed, which is absolutely astonishing. Out in central Pennsylvania, you have a socialist organization starting to form.
Well, you know, and frankly, Sean, I really think that's what's going to take, especially in, you know, in the areas that the Democratic Party has just freaking abandoned, right? I mean, you remember what Fetterman used to talk about? He talked about, you know, the areas that were just kind of like left behind.
Destitute wastelands, pretty much.
Exactly, right? I mean, John Fetterman, when he ran in the Democratic primary, that was kind of his message. I mean, that guy was like, look, we've just kind of like signed off, right?
We signed off on Hazleton, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, exactly. Reading, Allentown, exactly. You know, Altoona, Johnstown, Erie.
Right.
You know, like York, you know, like all these places, Harrisburg, you know, there's not an active Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party that's active out here is corrupt and it's full of nepotism and people connect to the state or the regional party.
Exactly. And so you're going to have the people that are going to make a difference in those areas are going to be the people that are committed to organizing like for the long haul. And, you know, look, Democratic Party wants to get behind that. Great. You know, we're going to welcome you aboard, but we're not going to wait around it. You know, we can't wait around. Basically you've kind of been complicit in the decimation of our state and our nation. So get on board or get out of the way is really what the message has got to be. But, nuts. So glad a lot of stuff going on. I mean, that's the kind of good stuff that's going on kind of locally. And I think that's where the best stuff is happening. Really, it's at a local level right now. So that's good news. So listen, we're coming up to a break and then we'll come back for kind of short Cinco de Mayo kind of sign off for today. And then we'll look forward to the fight. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
We are the resistance. Ah, we are living proof. They will know what happens. Ah, if they don't tell the truth. We will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. This is how it all gets started. Ah, secret votes behind closed doors. While they MAGA in the closet. Ah, getting richer off the poor. We will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. Throw our healthcare in the garbage. Ah, blame it on Planned Parenthood. They must know what they have started. Ah, we won't be misunderstood. We will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. The aching of our feet won't slow us down.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. So, Sean, as we wrap things up for today, on this rainy, is it raining out there in Harrisburg?
Yeah, it's a bit dreary out here.
Yeah, it's been pretty much rainy on kind of all day long out here. But as we wrap up this rainy Cinco de Mayo, news and blues, man, what do you got?
Well, talking about brew-wise, Pizza Boy has a really awesome sour IPA that just came out this week. It's called Lemon Dairy. It is a sour lemon lactose IPA.
Nice.
So it's a sour IPA where they added a bunch of lactose to it and lemon flavoring, and it's 8.5%, and it's like it tastes like you're drinking a lemonade.
Oh man, that's nice. Well, I'll tell you, I guess it's that's what you want as you go into summer, man. We're gonna need something to fuel the resistance.
It is the quintessential summer beer right now on tap.
Pizza. And it's awesome. Well, I'll tell you, you know, I down my way out in Perkasie, Free Will Brewing has got a bottle release today, which I'm gonna be picking you up some bottles. You kind of made sure it was like, hey, look, I'm gonna do it. I actually went there yesterday, Sean, just in case, because every once in a while they'll have like. They'll put some stuff out early, you know. So I said I stopped by on my way home just to see if it was there, but it wasn't out yet. But so I'll be stopping by today at Free Will to pick up.
They have basically this one really caught my eye.
Yeah, this is called the 5th of May, and it is a Cinco de Mayo release. It is a key lime sour ale, and they have a key lime sour. They kind of do this on a regular basis, but it's their key lime sour ale, but it's in tequila barrels, aged tequila barrels, and they add Himalayan salt to it to create what they call a fun and unique beverage. But it's so kind of like, it's like the margarita of beers, of sours that should be released today. And it's a limited bottle release, and they do say that they're going to have a limited keg tapped on it today too as well. So all looking forward. So I'm going to be bringing my growlers there too, see if I can get some growler fills in addition to some bottles for you.
Nice.
Yeah, and people should know this too as well. It's like, you know, they've done, I have to say, is that Free Will has done some really cool stuff in the community. They're very, very active in kind of the Percocet, Sellersville area. They've expanded now too as well. They've got a tasting area up, what the hell is that place called? I always forget the name of it.
Peddler's Village.
They got a tasting room up there too as well. But they've always been active when they're, you know, there's events happening. They kind of come out and they support it. We have, you know, tree lighting ceremonies every year. Free Will kind of is one of the sponsors. And one of the things that I really like that they've done, they've outside their brewery, you know, they just kind of set up picnic tables. Now they even got like a little courtyard with some outside tables and stuff. And they have food trucks that come by all the time. And the food trucks alone are worth it. Right. They had, you know, they had some amazing, like Ethiopian food that kind of comes out there in the food trucks. And for the release today, they've got, this is kind of one of their, you know, their go-tos, Urbans. It's called Urbans, but it's wood-fired pizza coming out the food truck. You can go by, get yourself some pizza at the food truck, and pick up some of your stuff there too as well. So, good on them for this. I can't wait to taste it, Sean.
Yeah.
So yeah, we also wait. Got, Yeah. So we also got some. Sean wants to give you a little preview. We've been kind of kicking around this idea for a bit. Sean's kind of and saying like, how can we kind of expand some of what we're doing, right? Both in Facebook and online and the podcast and so on. So Sean, why don't you tell folks a little bit about what you're thinking?
So one of the things, like, you know, since I've noticed, you know, plus anyone's noticed if you just follow Facebook every day, the logarithms on Facebook are now weighted towards video, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I put everything out on video on Facebook instead of YouTube is because it has a lot more reach. And also, you can't really rip something off of YouTube or off of Facebook the way you can off of YouTube. So, and plus, if anyone ever, you know, publishes a story with our video in it, like on Raw Story or Penn Live or any other website, they must embed the video into that, right?
Right.
So that gets a lot more reach. Videos get a lot more reach on Facebook. And, you know, just sharing a couple groups, you know, like what the one Eichelberger, both Eichelberger videos had like, you know, 7,000, 8,000 or 5,000 views over the past week. One of the things, and it really gets our reach out there. So one of the things I'm looking at doing is starting a weekly wrap up, something, maybe every Wednesday or Thursday, do a 3 to 5 minute video about the top three issues that's happened in Pennsylvania this week, that week.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. So I'm going to go out and get a tripod this weekend from Best Buy, rearrange my apartment a little bit just to make it a little bit more aesthetically pleasing. You don't have to see how dirty the clothes pile up on the couch are, but no. Just have a nice backdrop set up and do this on a weekly basis and start doing like a short like video blog and put up to the Facebook page once a week and do that. So I'm looking forward to experimenting with this.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. And I think, you know, what Sean said there too as well is kind of really important is that, you know, part of the behind the scenes work that we do at Raging Chicken is trying to pay attention to how we actually reach people, right, with our coverage. I mean, as much as, you know, I mean, Sean and I and some of the writers that we bring aboard love doing this work. The goal is not simply just, you know, writing for the sake of writing. The idea is to kind of, you know, contribute to building social movements, to kind of hold power accountable, to do the kind of like hard-nosed work we do. And, you know, in addition to some other commentary and things like that too. And so part of that has to, you know, by the nature of our site being, you know, an internet-based organization, we have to pay attention to this stuff. And you could see, for example, that Facebook was Facebook and a whole bunch of, I mean, there's been weird stuff that's been going on just in terms of algorithms and analytics over the past, you know, really past 6 to 8 months or so, where you can see that the way that people are accessing our site, or how they're accessing our site for that matter, has changed. So we, you know, have to kind of make sense of that and think about how do we kind of best reach folks. And this is one of them. I mean, it's been great to kind of see our reach and our listenership on the podcast continue to grow. That's been very, very positive. It's also, you know, seeing the you know, the videos that Sean's been posting have been going nuts, which tells us also, you know, not only are they great videos, right, they're getting behind the scenes stuff, but that Facebook is privileging those things, which is important. You know, one of the plans that I had been working on or thinking about doing, gearing up for the summer, was to really take this podcast and then really push it on YouTube so that we would have the channel too as well. But then YouTube just basically threw a whole wrench into the machine of a lot of political podcasting by basically really limiting your ability to kind of monetize what's going on there. In other words, you know, people are clicking on your site and things like this. You get a small kickback from ads and that kind of stuff. They basically made the threshold so high that really, you know, independent political podcasting on YouTube is nice to have, but it's not an ability to actually fund what you're doing. So we got to go. So anyways, we've got a lot of stuff coming forward. It's going to be some really cool stuff to look forward to. If you can become a member, go to support membership tab at ragingchickenpress.org, click on become a member, give us a one-time donation, help support our work and get the word out, right? See something you like here, don't just click on it, don't just like it, share it with your friends, right? Share it to your networks. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney. Sean, I'll see you next week, if not sooner.
All right, I'll talk to you later. I'm going to get off to a Scott Perry rally right now.
All right. Go see him and ask him how he did on the wonders of the ACA, as he was seen laughing all over the web.
All right.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Talk to you later.
See you next week.
Bye. See ya.